his relationship with you and
ETH,
ETH, and what about the Woodward Institute?
Well, yes, so when he became so famous, we were not able to offer him a position. He didn't have at Harvard any teaching duties, at least teaching duties he didn't want. If he didn't want to teach, he was not...
He didn't have to.
And it would be impossible to have here a professor without teaching duties, so to say.
Yes, yes, I imagine.
As they have in Harvard. But we still thought always to bind him stronger to Switzerland. So finally, I persuaded SIBA Company to organize an institute in Basel in which he could do whatever he wanted, with the idea that if the result has some practical value, they will be used by SIBA Company, and if not, it will be a good chemistry. So the institute, the Woodward Institute, was organized in Basel, in the area of SIBA Company. He had a laboratory with about 6 co-workers, with a kind of lieutenant who would lead the research during his absence.
Who was that?
There were several of them.
Nobody.
Dr. Häusler, for example.
Yes.
And then later he was replaced by Dr. Ernst, and later replaced by Dr. Kosteli. There were three of them who were chemists of SIBA Company and more or less given the position temporarily.
On loan to the institute.
To Woodward. They stayed members of the employees of the SIBA Company, but were so to say on loan to Woodward.
Yes,
Institute.
Yes. But what was the cooperation between, or the relationship between the Woodward Institute and the ETH, the Swiss Federal Institute?
No.
How about vitamin B12 when Eschenmoser and
That was completely independent. Nothing was done on vitamin B12 in Woodward Institute in Basel.
Oh, it wasn't?
That was all done at Harvard.
Oh, I see.
And during these many visits of Professor Woodward, Professor Eschenmoser decided to also to work on B12 almost at the same time when Woodward did it. He knew that Woodward is doing that, but he was not afraid. And finally they started independently, and slowly they came. The task was so difficult and so time consuming that they decided that each of these two groups will do their work on a certain part of vitamin B12, and then they, at the end, they united, they exchanged experience, they exchanged results, even compounds. So it was a very, very close cooperation in which each of these people contributed his own share, and finally each was crowned by the success that was considered by a German chemist, said that's Mount Everest of synthetic age.
Wonderful piece of work.
But that didn't have anything to do with the Woodward Institute in Basel.
Oh, I see.
They never touched anything which in connection with
vitamin B12. So
that was done either in Zurich by a group of Professor Eschenmoser or at Harvard by Professor Woodward's group.
I see.
It was also a problem which didn't have any practical importance, because it is so clear that it will not be possible to use that for synthesis. Vitamin B12 can be produced so cheaply from microbial cultures that this, all these difficulties, it would never be, or you should never say never, but at least we can't now think that a synthesis would be, let us say, really a source
of vitamin B12.
Yes.
Well, I really would like to ask you about stereochemistry. You received the Nobel Prize for your contribution to the stereochemistry of organic molecules and for reactions involving stereospecific pathways, and that was in 1975. And I would really be interested knowing how you started to become so involved into
the work on alkaloids. All these structures have a number of what was called asymmetric carbon atoms or asymmetric atoms at all, and it's mostly so that each of these natural compounds has a number of these asymmetric centers or asymmetric atoms, which leads then to a number of stereoisomers.
Yes.
And it was necessary first to specify the stereoisomer you have in mind.
Yes.
If you have a number, let us say, 64 stereoisomers, and only one is a natural compound, and only one is biologically active, so you have, in some way, to have an opportunity first to represent this molecule by a model or by a stereo formula. Secondly, you have to have a certain language to speak, and then you have to have a method to prepare this specific stereoisomer. So these are all problems which at that time were not solved, or were only very, I would say, poorly solved. And during our work we had the need, we needed a language to talk about our results. And so slowly all the interest in stereochemistry became always stronger and stronger. And it started, let us say, with the determination of configuration of synhona alkaloids, of quinine. We knew the constitution, but we didn't know it has four asymmetric carbon atoms, and that means 16 possible 2-4 stereoisomers.
Yes.
But quinine, one of them, which has antimalarial activity, is one of these 16, and you have to know when you like to talk about that, which one is that.
Yes.
So you need some symbols, some language, and so that was one. And then if you want to determine the structure, you have to know, to have methods, to determine the special, at that time, the X-ray analysis, and especially, was not so developed. It could be used only in very few cases with success. It was very tedious, so there were chemical methods we had to develop to be able to say something about the spatial, about the configuration of this spatial distribution of the atoms. And that all we slowly developed, part by part. So if you read this laudatio, you see that it is not something very special. It is in general about stereochemistry of molecules and reactions. We did both, but on a relatively broad basis. We were not the only people, of course. There were many others. But perhaps we made a little bigger impression than the other. It's a matter of good luck.
Well, you have a very interesting story about how you got together with Kahn and Ingold in Manchester.
Yes.
Would you care to tell me?
Well, it was just about this language, how to speak about this, how to specify a certain thing about you want to speak about.
Yes.
And it was, for the carbohydrates, it was such a, I would say, parochial solution, just for carbohydrates, which was developed by one of the greatest chemists of all times, Emil Fischer.
Yes.
But that was very imperfect. When you applied that on some on alkaloids and so on, you came very very soon into great difficulties and mm-hmm. controversies and so Kahn was editor of the Chemical Society journals, and Ingold was the president of the society at that time.
Yes.
And they had, of course, problems because all this, when the people published, the nomenclature or the symbols were all controversial, so editor wanted to put it into a good order. So he asked Ingold what to do, and Ingold suggested something in 51 when the people were really hopeless, frustrated about the possibilities. So they suggested something, but their suggestion was not perfect, I would say. So it was a meeting of the American, of the English Chemical Society in Manchester.
Excuse me, was that the sequence rule you're talking about?
Yeah, we are now talking about. Yeah, they suggested a so-called
sequence rule. Yes, which is still applied.
Yes, but not in the same way as they suggest.
Yes.
So when we were in Manchester after the meeting, which was very successful, we had a symposium on dynamic stereochemistry, which I was helping to organize. And then we, ICI, Imperial Chemical Industries, organized a ball, Octagon House in Blakely, near Manchester. Mm-hmm. And everybody danced, but Ingold, Kahn, and myself, we all three didn't dance. We were no dancers. No? So we drank beer and discussed chemistry. And they asked me, what do I think about their proposal? Mm-hmm. And I said, terrible. Terrible. No, we will make now a bigger mess than it was. It is already now, that we have now. No?
What was wrong with their...
And they, instead of sending me to hell, were kind English gentlemen, say, I explained them why.
Yes.
Uh-huh. They say, why don't we write a paper together? And I immediately accepted. So then we met many, many times. I spent quite a lot of time for flying to London, and they came also to Switzerland, and we met somewhere else. And finally, we put down the principles. You know, we had to think. You know, how a good system should can be constructed. And then we were very soon, more or less, satisfied with our principles. But then the details had to be developed, and so we published them in 56, I think, our first paper in Experientia together, where the fundamentals, the basic principles of this what they call now CIP system were laid down. And then that system was accepted by Professor Richter at Beilstein, and they used the system to specify about 150,000 of compounds which they had in Beilstein. We would never do anything like that, but they had to do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they found certain smaller, in principle, it was good, but there were smaller difficulties with the system. Mm-hmm. So we had to prune it, or to improve it. And we did it for several years, for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And in 66 we published a second paper. And that was the last paper together with Kahn and Ingold. And in this paper we considered all what all the things which were found by Beilstein. We called it Beilstein test.
I see. So you used the actual classification to improve the system.
The basic principles remained the same, but the applications had to be in some way more correctly or more exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we published now with Professor Helmchen a third paper in Angewandte Chemie, in which we still when we wanted to apply the system to computers, so that the computers, but we found again that computers don't understand us sometimes.
I see.
So we had to improve.
That's another test, isn't it?
That's another
the computer test.
Yeah, and we have it now again. Beilstein editors tested again, and they found again small difficulties. Mm-hmm. We will have to publish a fourth paper.
You will.
Yes. Oh. And chemical abstracts also mm-hmm. use them. I've been visiting chemical abstracts recently. They used CIP system on 1,600,000 compounds. They have now in so-called chemical abstracts online service, service online. They have registered 6,600,000 compounds, of which 1,600,000 compounds were specified by CIP system.
Mm-hmm. So that's optically active
compounds. Optically active or not or optically
not
active,
stereoisomers.
Stereoisomers,
yes. Well, CIP, of course, stands for Kahn-Ingold-Prelog.
Yeah,
we still call it the RNS system.
But you know, it doesn't only use RNS,
no,
but
no,
it uses also
I'm aware of that
PNM
now.
And
UNL.
And all kinds of
yes,
other things,
it's
you know. So we think that,
so
of course, for students, it is still RNS
still,
is important.
Yes, that's
the
all they can cope
they
with.
All can
right,
and for
right.
most practical purposes.
Right.
But it has to be a very general system which will not fail in really what we want. We want to make it so perfect that it can be used. Or it can be used on every so-called stereogenic unit, mm-hmm. A unit which is the reason for stereoisomerism. And that's of course not easy. If you think about all possibilities you have, it's not
yes.
so easy.
Yes, like helices and
all kinds of
just
other
deal
things,
with
yeah.
asymmetric centers,
conformations,
or
chiral conformations,
yeah.
stabilized
yeah. conformations.
Yeah.
That's
so
where you were also pioneering in
yeah, we were
in
among
including
the first,
conformations.
You know. Yes.
Into stereo. The stereochemical system.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
So
we can specify conformations.
I see,
and,
yes.
And then you had more or less also to define many concepts which were not very exactly defined in stereochemistry. Mm-hmm. What is a configuration? What
yes,
is a conformation?
Yes.
Which isomers are conformational? Mm-hmm. Which are configurational, and so on, and mm-hmm. so on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were usages which certainly were developed, you know, pragmatically. That means that was a case, and the concepts were developed for a very special case. Mm-hmm. Then it was used for some other cases. And whether either rightly or unrightly, and so a certain organizational order had to be developed in all these concepts, usages, and so on. And we tried to contribute something to that. Mm-hmm. And it seems that the people needed that. Mm-hmm. I think Confucius said, if I would become an emperor of China, I would first give the words the right sense, because if the words don't have the right sense, laws can't be written. And if the laws are not clear, the justice can be done. And if the justice is not there, the people become restless.
Uh-huh.
They become restless. And then if the people are restless, then empire is in danger. So the first thing is for a politician to give the right meaning.
Yes, 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 indeed.
And so it is also in every science. I think it's very important that the words that we understand each other
exactly.
very well.
Exactly. Yes.
And we tried also to do, and because most people who are very active, they don't care. They think that everybody will understand them anyway, and that it's more important to make discoveries than to clean the language. We are, in a certain way, I am not very proud of it, we are the linguists of science.
Yes, well, you seem to be also very mathematically oriented in your approach.
Not very much. I learned all mathematics I learned as an amateur.
You did?
I never had a good formal education.
But I get the feeling that you approach it in the sense as, say, Van 't Hoff approached it, which was novel then, and he approached stereochemistry from a mathematical point.
I don't think that all these older chemists knew any mathematics
in the modern sense.
They
maybe,
did it more instinctively, you know. They did it more instinctively. I don't think that Van 't Hoff, for example, was a mathematician.
He
had a certain intuition, and now it was also a small problem. To use elementary mathematics, elementary geometry, on the very elementary level, to express certain things or to correct certain things. But I had to learn my mathematics all as an autodidact. How do you say it?
Autodidactic.
Yes.
Self-taught.
Self-taught.
In simpler terms.
Yes. I discussed it sometimes with colleagues who are experts, but they are mostly not interested in the problems.
Not in geometry.
Chemistry. They are too simple for them.
Yes.
The general things are so simple that they are not interested, and the specific things they are not also interested because they are too specific, and they don't know enough chemistry to be interested in this. Small specific problems.
Problems. Right. Well, you had some very famous predecessors who were also dealing with stereochemistry at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. Was there any influence? Wislicenus, Victor Meyer?
You see,
or was that just.
It's very interesting that, as you very probably know, I had many, many very famous predecessors.
Huh? Yes, they all got the Nobel Prize.
The first professor here was Staedeler, who was not so famous. But then his successor was Wislicenus. Huh?
Yes.
And Wislicenus was one of the founders of stereochemistry.
Yes.
His successor was Hantzsch, who was also one of the founders of stereochemistry and of physical organic chemistry. His pupil was, for example, Werner, who was then professor at the university and the founder of coordination chemistry. The successor of Hantzsch was Bamberger, who unfortunately was a relatively short time professor. He had an accident and lost completely his memory, so he had to retire at a very early age. His successor was Würstetter, who was then Nobel Prize winner, and his successor was Staudinger, who was also later a Nobel Prize winner. His successor was Kuhn, and successor of Kuhn was Ružička. So it's I'm the fifth.
Did Kuhn won the Nobel Prize also?
Kuhn was Nobel Prize.
And Ružička.
Before Ružička.
And you.
And so we are five in a row. It's not so often that at a certain laboratory or a certain institution you have a continuous row of five Nobel Prizes. We hope that this will continue.
When did you learn about the Nobel Prize? How did it get to you, the message?
Oh, very easy. I got a phone at about 1:30 from the radio.
From the radio?
Yeah.
Oh.
On the broadcast.
Yes. They heard it first.
They heard it first.
They always do.
I didn't have the slightest idea, you know. And after that, the second one was the president of our city, Dr. Widmer, was the second who graduated me. I don't know how he knew. And then, of course, many other people. And the message from Stockholm came much later. I got a telegram from Stockholm then, of course. Well, you see, I was relatively old. Huh?
You were just retired?
I was 69, but it was 1 year before my retirement.
Before retirement, but you were still active, you were teaching.
Yes, I was teaching and giving courses and so on.
So how did your students react?
Oh, well, you see, in Switzerland we don't make a great fuss. I came here.
Yes.
After that, it was after lunch, you know. I didn't hurry, I took a streetcar. And they didn't expect me. They thought, you know, that I would take at least a taxi cab.
Yes, indeed, you deserved
here in
it.
This lobby, you know, everything was full of students and colleagues, you know, who had already prepared some champagne. And,
I think that's quite nice.
We had a small celebration here. But it was nothing. You see, we don't do much fuss in Switzerland about these things, you know, because it's not so rare, let us say, just in our case, as it's perhaps in some other places.
A little spoiled.
People are a little spoiled. And I think it's very nice that in Switzerland they are not heroes worshippers. We are a democratic country, you know.
That's true.
Well, they knew we had Professor Karrer and Professor Werner at the university, also two Nobel Prize winners in a row, and so on. But well, nobody would care about them, you know. They were just normal citizens. Well, when you get the Nobel Prize, you get into newspapers and so on, but only for very few days.
You get interviewed.
You will get interviewed, but not so much.
No, not in Switzerland.
Not in Switzerland. No. The people don't make quite. Money. That's very pleasant, I must confess.
Yes. Well, in science, maybe it's not so.
Literature, peace
not so
is
much.
Much more popular.
Yes, and especially then in the movie industry, if you win an Oscar, that's a different story. Your teaching here at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. Did you teach the organic chemistry like your predecessor?
Oh yes, during Kruzicka times,
I gave the
elementary organic chemistry.
That's 1, 2, and 3 or what?
1 and 2 by that time.
There
were two semesters, winter and summer semester, and there were two organic chemistries.
I see, two organic chemistries.
Two courses.
And how many students did you have about on an average?
Oh, we had already about 100 students in chemistry department, and they were rather few in the natural sciences department. So we had about 120 and so on in a lecture room. All the PhD candidates came to hear it a second time or something like that, especially during Kruzicka's time. I gave it for about 16 years.
16?
The first course and the second course in organic chemistry. Then I had more colleagues who shared this difficult job, you know. I had to give courses every morning from 8 to 9, from Monday to Saturday, including, and also we had some seminars in the afternoon, so I had to examine practically everybody for several years.
That's a heavy load. But your teaching assistants for your laboratories and also for...
Laboratory work was practically completely in the hands of some younger colleagues. So I didn't care very much.
So
and that was well organized, but I gave the main courses.
But there are no tests? Are you still on the same system that there were no tests?
Yeah, we have now. It's much more complicated. We have instead of... we had different types of organic chemistry from different type of students. Professor Ružička and myself, we gave courses for pharmaceutical students, for chemistry students, for natural science.
Individually
students.
or mixed together?
All of them were in one lecture.
In one basic lecture.
And that's all now specialized. You know, we give a special lecture for biochemistry students and special lectures for pharmaceutical students
see,
and so
I
on.
See.
And we have now about different possible combinations. There are about four organic chemistry now, mm-hmm. since it was two.
It's
taught in four during four semesters.
Yes,
I
see.
So it changed, huh?
It changed.
I even don't know exactly what they do now.
Did you use a textbook or did you also just give a lecture that you
prepared? No, I tried to prepare.